And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
I'm Steffi Barnett. And today on the show, Cutie Pock in Academia.
Lara and Sheila will be talking to us about their experiences.
And BBC Inside Out West.
They're actually here with cameras in the studio right now. But we'll be talking to Ben and Seb, joining us live on air to explain exactly why a little later on.
All that and more coming today.
Right here on Shout Out.
Dum, dum, dum.
I knew you'd have to do
that. Yeah, you know it's mine now. I've stolen it
is.
Off you.
Laura, you own it, girl. You
I
own
do own
that.
It. I've got the copyrights and everything. I've patented it. So
I bet you don't know what the song is, though, do you?
Is it a song?
It is, yeah.
Is no, it? I don't. Yeah.
I thought it was just a jingle.
Yeah,
no,
so
no. It is a song dum, that dum. Is looped.
Okay, well, so. I've been educated today, Phil.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Really annoyingly, when I had it on the tip of my tongue and I asked you that, I now can't remember what it's called, but I'll find out for
course,
you for next
of
week.
Of course, so. Of course.
Right, in the meantime, Nigel of Western Pride just asked me to mention that they've got a fundraiser. That's this Saturday, October the 27th, at Club Taboo. That's 40 Boulevard, Western Supermare, BS23 1NF. I guess you got to be dressed up for the part.
Well, it's all coming up for Halloween, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so you going to do anything for Halloween?
I'm going to be 35,000 feet.
Oh,
what?
Oh, in an airplane, yes. Obviously.
No, I'm going to use me...
your broomstick.
Use me broom.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I'm going to save money on flights on the 31st.
No, we will be having a Halloween-themed show next week, as we do every year.
Yeah, so, yeah, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, so but I presume you're out partying, aren't you?
I am. I'm going to...
Being the student that you are, there must be all sorts going on.
No, yeah, there's loads of things at different places. To be honest, I haven't actually been out for quite a long time, so I'm so looking forward to this. But me and my friend and I are dressing up as like roadkill, kind of. So we're gonna have like
roadkill,
yeah, kind of like with like someone's like
really?
Chopped us up, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, I know. It's like, yeah, I know.
So I do remember a few years ago, one of my friends, because of course, the Bear Bar also does like Halloween, just like they all do,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he did this really cool thing where he actually stuck a zip down the middle of his face,
yeah,
like
no,
and it was so well done because he painted like the bit in the middle kind of like red and the light.
Yeah.
And it was just like you walked in and it was enough to make you scream and want to run out again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing is, I was going to do something on my face, but then you sweat it off and you're going to be like...
Depends how much dancing you do, really.
Oh, there's going to be lots of dancing, lots of booty shaking. So I need, and lots of like, yeah, just skanking out. So I definitely need...
Skanking out. That's a phrase I've never heard before. Skanking out.
Well, yeah, skanking out.
I've heard of the word term skank, but not referring to dancing.
Skanking out, yeah. So you go mental. You just keep going, like keep grooving. Like it's cool, like for like a good 6 hours. So yeah, I'm gonna get lots of sleep tomorrow and like get ready for the party.
Enjoy the weekend. Yeah.
I think I'm going away at the weekend as well. So
anyway, Steph, do you want to introduce our next one, because it is delayed from last week, isn't it?
It was because we had Lara and we couldn't shut her up. We couldn't fit the podcast in. So this is delayed from last week. Just Like Us podcast.
Just Like Us, for LGBT young people.
Hello again. We're back with another episode for the Just Like Us podcast. I'm Marley.
And I'm Nora. Today we're going to be talking about the Gender Recognition Act and why the government has decided to actually start changing it. We're going to be talking about why people want to change it and what it is, because a lot of people don't know what it is.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
According to the UK government website, trans people are able to receive legal recognition of their acquired gender through a process set out in the GRA. Since it came into force, only 4,910 people have legally changed their gender. This is fewer than the number of trans respondents in the government's LGBT survey, who were clear that they wanted legal recognition, but had not applied because they found the current process too bureaucratic, expensive, and intrusive. The government, therefore, is seeking your view on how to reform this legal recognition process.
I feel like we should mention, like, It's not changing the Equality Act. A lot of people are saying, oh, trans people don't exist. Oh, we don't need this. It's like, that's not what this is actually doing. A lot of people are using this as a vehicle for transphobia, and it's literally just the legal processes to actually change your gender. Like, trans people are going to exist regardless of whether or not it's legally recognized. If you think about LGBT history, we talked about Section 28, which only went out of effect in around 2003, 2004. So the fact that the GRA was actually in at the same time that was just coming out of effect, like, that is very revolutionary. But as it is now, and the context we have now, it's not that great. We have kind of information from Stonewall about what they wanted to be changed to. And if you think about the fact that this isn't actually happening now, it's kind of weird. I'm going to start off this episode by saying I'm not trans, so I'm not, like, I don't need to think about these things. But it's actually kind of weird because I didn't know that this was a thing people had to think about.
According to Stormwell.org, they have listed a few options that they want to reform the GRA. For example, they're pushing to require no medical diagnosis or presentation of evidence for trans people to get their legal identity recognized. And I mean, I feel like I personally reside mainly in the US, but like in a similar fashion, I just know from friends and other individuals that this whole process is not only humiliating but exhausting.
Like, I know the kind of things that some of my friends have to do to actually get their gender recognized and things like that, and go through like getting hormones. That, as it is a very like medical process. It's very much you need to have medical evidence that you are trans enough to need to change your legal gender. Like, that's what it seems to me. That's not how that works. If you are trans, you're trans. That's it. That's how that works.
Additionally, one of the reforms that Stonewall proposes is recognizing non-binary identities, which, huge fan of.
Very good. I'm a fan.
Yes. 10 out of 10. Support that.
Gender binary doesn't exist. The proposed reform would also give younger trans people the right to self-determination, which, again, I am very much into. Trans people exist. They don't just magically turn 21 and decide, oh yes, I am trans. It's like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, actually, whenever you're genderqueer or trans or anything beyond a cis gender, you're just given a sticker, actually. That's what happens. It's like, you're welcome to a club.
Happy 18th birthday. You are officially trans.
You've made
it. Non-binary.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
I haven't actually filled out the GRA yet, but I'm going to. At the minute, it just seems very, you know, bureaucratic and messy. And it could just be so much easier because I feel like for a lot of members of the LGBT community who are kind of around trans or non-binary friends, you realize that it's not as bureaucratic and like legal as the government seems to think it is in the GRA. It's a lived experience, and it should be reflective of that lived experience, not a bunch of paperwork.
Yeah, I mean, I think the current process under the GRA is just honestly so intrusive and exhausting. And so speak out, show up to your consultation, and that is how you're going to be able to make change. And I mean, this is a huge step that we need in the UK, but I mean, I have so many friends who are trying to get hormones, others are trying to get funding for surgery, just to even like legally change their gender. And it's just, the process is honestly exhausting. And like, I am someone who, I don't know exactly what's going on, but I identify as genderqueer. At the end of the day, like, the process is already exhausting internally, and adding on the interactions with psychiatrists and clinicians who just don't necessarily understand is just demeaning in so many ways. And I don't know, that's why this issue is really important to me.
Yeah. And economic burden as well. LGBT people, as is, statistically, is something about LGBT youth. There are higher rates of unemployment and things like that, especially with trans individuals. It's not great at the minute. And at the same time, it's like, I guess we're trying to answer, like, why we care, but also why you should care. And at the end of the day, I think it's just, like, there's already a lot of transphobia within the LGBT community. And having people who should be part of your community and should be allies adding to that by not supporting legal recognition and simplifying legal recognition is not going to be helping much at all. The LGBT community should be a cohesive unit, and that includes coming out for trans people who are members of your community and being a trans ally, even if you yourself are not trans, because that, at the end of the day, is how you're going to fight transphobia.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
Essentially, educate yourself on what trans issues are, educate yourself on what the GRA is doing, what the consultation is doing, and then go talk about it. Because as Marley mentioned earlier, the only way you're going to make a difference is to come out and actually show up, rock up, be consulted. That's all for us this month, but thank you so much for listening. We have greatly appreciated it. I'm not sure that I will be here next month. Scandal. But as we mentioned earlier, just invest yourself, because whether or not you're LGBT, you can make a difference. This is one of those very unique opportunities where you can actually make a difference and actually share what you think. And I know there are a lot of community groups that are filling this out together, and Stonewall's doing something. I know Labour has done something. So there are always going to be people that will help you fill this out in the best and most communicative way possible. Hopefully, if you're listening to this now, still have time to fill it out. So do that. But otherwise, thank you so much for listening. I have been Noura.
And I'm Marley, and this was a Just Like Us podcast.
You've been listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people. The show was hosted by Noura and Marley, produced by Samantha, Rosie and Marley, and edited by Clodagh, Fionn and Danny. The music was by Twisteria. We come into schools too. Young people, teachers and parents can find us at www.justlikeus.org.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
There you go. That is Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, and it's a song called Shallow. It's from A Star Is Born, which we were just talking about, actually. It's a movie I quite like to see. I haven't seen it yet.
So. You should see the original first, maybe, then you can compare. Yeah. Barbara Streisand. I mean,
Was it Barbara Streisand?
Yeah, I mean, I know Lady Gaga's got quite a good voice, but...
She's got an amazing voice.
A long way to go to beat Barbara Streisand.
You can't say that.
I just did!
I feel like that's going to be controversial.
Sorry, Lady Gaga, but I'm a Barbara fan.
I mean, to be fair, like, I think Barbara was probably more in your day than in our day.
Are we going to get ageist again here?
I mean,
be careful, she has got a broomstick.
Oh, well, you know.
No, I'm part of that. That's John Charge, ready for the 31st.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, I've got the black magic, so you know.
That's very true. So, exactly. Yes.
Anyway, Laura's back, but other side this time, because we're kind of interviewing you aren't we? And the lovely Sheila's back as well. It's lovely to have you back. It's been quite a while.
It has been a minute, indeed. Mm. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you. So now we're talking about academia, aren't we?
Yeah.
So we ought to kind of kick off talking about what the pair of you both do, because you're both studying at the moment, aren't you? Tell us individually, Laura, what are you studying?
So I just finished a master's degree in chemistry,
green box.
and now I'm doing a PhD in chemistry as well.
Jeez. Hey, okay.
Amazing. You knew this.
I know, but I can't stop gassing you.
So
What about you, Sheila? What are you studying?
I'm an undergraduate law student.
But you call her a brain box. I mean, law's not exactly easy.
If you just listen to Sheila speak, I could do it all the time.
No, please.
She has got a very mellow, sexy voice.
I know.
But Steffi, I thought you were married.
I am. I'm for quite a while as well. We'll go into that.
The reason that we're talking is because it's still Black History Month, isn't it? And one of the things that you really wanted to talk about was your kind of experiences at university. So give us how did the idea for doing this show come about? What have been your experiences?
So last year I did a diversity in STEM event, and that really talked about the fact that there's a severe lack of diversity in universities, particularly Bristol's. And one of the issues I have with it is because a lot of diversity is being pushed for gender, but nothing's about race or sexuality. So I really wanted to make that change, and I thought it was really important, particularly in Black History Month, to talk about the experience of being a Black and queer in academia. Because people talk about being Black, people talk about being queer, but they don't realise there's an intersection where people exist. And right. I thought it was very important for Sheila and I to talk about it. Just to basically share our experiences with people and yeah, help develop it, really.
So, yeah. I mean, before we go into it, we should point out, correct me if I'm wrong, your experiences of uni have been good. You are enjoying it in the life, are you not?
Been a mixed bag.
Yeah, right. So okay.
I've certainly heard in the press some incidents of racism.
And
that shocked me a bit, because I always think of the youth of the country being very progressive, and it'd be a new world when they've all become my age.
No, that's not the case, is it? No.
The thing is, I think it's more pronounced in Sheila's course, so I will let her speak. But for my course, no one's...
Oh, will you? That's very nice.
One day. No, but I think for my course, it's not so much that it's racist or anything like that. It's just very, very little Black and Asian people on the courses, and a lot of the contributions of Black and Asian people to science hasn't even been recognised, and there's a lot of tokenisation. So, like, for me, it's not been awful. I've not walked through life being like, oh God, this is horrible. But at the same time, I don't feel always comfortable, because I am in such a white space, and no one talks about it. Before I did the event, no one talks about race and sexuality. So
does that mind? Because when I go to see my son, who lives in Barbados, obviously there's an awful lot more Black people than there are white.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel uncomfortable.
Because...
is that...
Yeah, it's because, well, technically, in the world today, white people or Caucasian people tend to be the oppressor and not the oppressed.
Okay.
So even if you were to go to a Black-dominated country, you're still seen as even higher than I would be seen. And people even locals treat Black people and white people differently. So there's different, you wouldn't be made to feel uncomfortable.
Okay.
If you see what I mean. I went to, say, Lithuania or Poland or whatever like that, I don't want to claim they're all racist, but I'm just saying, if I did go to it would be a lot more hostile, if you know what I mean.
Or you'd probably be stared at.
Exactly, and stared out, and I've been taken photos of and things like that. And it's just basically how I walk through life. I don't always think, oh my God, everyone's racist, but I also do, I'm hyper aware of the fact that I'm Black, and the fact that people will see me differently, and the fact that I have to fight for a lot more things than my average other, like, white cis male counter colleague would do. Like, they can walk through university and be absolutely fine. I mean, obviously, mental health aside, but whereas me, I have to consider so many different things. What do you think, Sheila?
Yeah, no, I agree. On the point about Barbados, I mean, yeah, if we look at former colonies and places that, you know, where the British enslaved people and then left the countries kind of destitute, then there's obviously an association of whiteness to power.
Even now, after all the time has passed.
Even more pronounced now. Well, as pronounced as it was, it's just more subtle, I guess.
Yeah.
How does this end up coming down into a university kind of perspective then? I mean, you said earlier that you felt it was more pronounced on your course, Sheila. Well, Lara said, but...
I guess because law is inherently it's a sociological subject. It's about
how, of course, law is very old as well, isn't it? Some of it goes back an awful long way. So
yeah, so it's about how people relate to one another. So of course, one of the issues, I study race and law right now. That's one of the modules that I'm taking.
Right.
And that was created by two brilliant academics, Yvette Russell and Faluke Ipinyomi.
What the course was?
Yeah.
Right.
I helped, and a couple of other people helped, Sherwin Mataluko. And what we found is that what we're actually taught in the law school, we don't talk about the origins of law and the racialized origins of law. So we don't talk about how the same people who came up with theories about the purity of law and the objectivity of law were the same people who were talking about how Black people are inherently inferior. It was around the Enlightenment period that a lot of our legal thinking was developed, and actually, you know, you had thinkers like Kant and Hegel coming up with theories about Black inferiority that then informed...
And do you still see that in the law now, then?
Well, yeah, you do. I mean, if you think about the criminal justice system and the people who are hyper-policed, it's, you know, there are statistics like young Black men are 24 times more likely to be stopped and searched than young white men, or the fact that in 2014, black women and white women. White women were half as likely to be jailed for the same drug offenses as black women were. Or if you think more recently about the case of Lavinia Woodward, the Oxford medical student who stabbed her boyfriend but wasn't given jail time because it would, quote unquote, ruin her career. And so that you see the intersections of race and class, and how if you live in a poor area that's majoritarily populated by black people or people of color, there's going to be hyper-policing, but at the same time, the law isn't going to protect you. So
if you could change anything about what you're doing at uni and the like, what kind of things would you actually like to see change? Because there's always been this big argument about we shouldn't ignore our history, but at the same time, I mean, you obviously can't literally go and change absolutely every single law, but what could be done to make it more better and like, I don't know, perhaps focus on these things?
There needs to be wide-scale consciousness raising, I think. The fact that I'm in third year now studying race and law is amazing. I never thought I'd actually get the opportunity to do that at university. But I think that it shouldn't just be a select group of 40 students who have an interest in how race interacts with law, who get to study this and who get to understand that actually the law is inherently racist. I think it should be all students who go into the legal system, because they're the ones who become the judges and the legislators. They're the people who actually create these racist laws. They should be the ones learning from the outset that objectivity is really just a cishet white male's perspective. And that we actually, if we want to have holistic and fairer laws, the solution isn't to assume that one perspective can be objective, but it's, I rhymed, but it's actually to consider that multiple perspectives and multiple ways of knowing and being in the world are valid, and there need to be voices that would otherwise be marginalized put at the center, so that we can actually reimagine what the law could look like. I think we
is it something you think you're, I mean, because I'm assuming you're studying law because you want to go into having a career in this. Is that not everybody does? But is that the aim?
Well, when
and if so, if you do, are you intending to try and help bring some of this stuff about then?
This is a difficult question, actually. I'm at that point now where I have to start thinking about my future, and I don't know what I want to do. I think one of the biggest issues, actually, with studying law trying to enact change within the law is that the law is inherently problematic, and it creates its own parameters, which mean that people who have alternative visions for what it could be are shut out, because obviously, like, if you go in saying that the law is inherently racist, we need to tear down these structures and rebuild it from the start. The law
it's never quite right. I mean, unless correct me if I'm wrong, but unless they've changed things recently, I'm pretty sure that by law, because I'm married to my husband, I can cheat on him with as many men as I like, but if I cheat on him with a woman is when he's allowed to divorce me. And they haven't actually caught that bit of the law up yet. And even when you got something as modern as same-sex marriage, still not right. And of course, we've seen all the stuff that we've had with all the GD, what's it called?
GDPR.
GRA, thank you, that was what I was looking for. You know, things just, they seem to be quite behind the times, the law, don't
exactly.
they?
Exactly. I mean, we construct the law, and then the law constructs our ideas of how to be in the world. But the problem is that the people who are making the law aren't reflective of the people who actually live in our societies and, you know, have the experiences that we have. If it's just a bunch of, like, you know, cishet old white men who've been privileged their entire lives, how are they going to be able to consider what laws are necessary to protect people who are black, people who are trans, et cetera, et cetera?
Sheila, have the European Union laws overwrote, to the most part, UK laws? Mm-hmm. Have you seen a betterment of the legal system since
one of the issues, again, with European Union law is that it's very much based on, like, a liberal idea of fairness and justice and equality, which, from its standpoint, tries to make everything equal by bringing marginalized groups up to the level of the, like, imagined cishet white man. And that's as far as it goes. So it's still inherently transphobic. It's still inherently racist. It's because it doesn't actually consider the perspective of the people who are marginalized. It considers that it just says that, well, if we make everything the same, if we just even the playing field, then everyone will be treated the same under this law. So although there are surface level changes that the European Union law has enacted, if you look at countries in Europe, there's still a lot of racism that's not dealt with. I mean,
England, especially in East European EU countries.
Eastern European, but even in France, you know, the fact that Marine Le Pen was almost elected. And, you know, like, there are nationalist fronts. Sweden, which is often thought to be, like, the bastion of democracy and freedom and liberalism, is actually... that, like, there are Nazi marches in that country, so...
Yeah, it's probably because there seems to be a right-wing backlash, and people seem to all across the world at the moment.
Well, we saw what happened when Trump got in, didn't we?
Well, you that's know, it's right-wing one of those backlash. Things that happens.
We're seeing people being threatened with bombs now, and there doesn't seem to be this idea that this is actually not a normal part of political discourse. I mean, Brexit... Joe Cox was assassinated. It was a political assassination. Yes, and we seem to have forgotten that as a country.
Yeah,
I think with science as well, because I can't really talk about law, but is also the fact that I was on a committee actually the other day, and it's the criteria in which is set. So obviously a lot of panels are now being pushed to do unconscious bias, so you don't know the race or the sex or whatever of the person applying. But the problem with that is, you need to look at, first assess the criteria in which you're measuring someone by. And that criteria is obviously set by white cis male. So, and it's obviously not, and a lot of the, so one of these awards where you had to, the most amount of work in 10 years, but they didn't take into the fact that some women were having children in those years. So obviously they had to take maternity leave and all these things. So, a lot of the things that are written and a lot of the criteria set, particularly within science, doesn't cater for other people. It just caters for one demographic, and so that one demographic keeps doing well, keeps getting promoted, keeps like getting into higher positions, without realizing it's leaving other people behind. And I think for my syllabus, I'd like for it to be like decolonized. So I'd like a lot of the people or the contributions from scientists who weren't written into history to be recognised, because there's many contributions. And I feel also I think there needs to be more like events around talking about race and things like that, which there isn't until it's just a shame. Like, it took Sheila and I to come talk about being black and being academic and talk about the problems in order for someone to be like, okay, we need to do events around this to talk about it.
Yeah.
It takes, sometimes it's annoying that it takes the oppressed to make the change. Like, the oppressor does see it. Like, I've attended many people that are really excited about my events and things like that, but the fact that they never started it, I think, is a problem in itself. So decolonizing the syllabus is...
Well,
like
I'm afraid we have to end the conversation there because we've completely run out of time. But the good news is, we've got Kiki coming in to do a podcast every single month from January. So black voices will be heard on Shout Out Radio.
Yes, you're not ready.
Listen, hopefully we'll see you again. But thank you ever so much for coming and joining us.
Thank you for having me. I love talking about this stuff. So thanks for giving me a platform.
Anyway, news headlines are up next. Stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's a Panic at the Disco and High Hopes. I really like that one. It's kind of like a nice bouncy one, isn't it? So
you weren't bouncing.
You don't like it, aren't you?
You weren't bouncing. Hardly one cheek lifted off the seat.
But anyway, hello, Matthew.
Good evening.
How nice to have you back.
It's lovely to be here. Very good. A little bit croaky this week, but you know.
I was going to say, earlier when you came in, you sounded really like you'd lost your voice in it.
Is that croaky or sexy?
Well, that's a matter for interpretation, isn't it?
Or the listeners to make their decisions on that.
Text now.
You decide, yes.
Are you a Panic at the Disco fan? Is that your cup of tea, that?
Do I panic at discos? Or?
Well, that's the name of the group that's saying that.
New to me, I'll be honest. New.
Oh, okay.
I like it.
Well, if we take that new and put an S suddenly, and that was a really bad link, wasn't it? Never mind, let's get some news.
This is Shoutout News on Thursday, the 25th of October. Tributes have been paid to a young emerging designer who campaigned to end the stigma against HIV. Jacob Alexander is believed to have taken his own life last weekend. He was aged 25. Mr. Alexander became known for a TED Talk in 2016 in which he spoke about his own diagnosis with HIV. He went on to launch the Positive Project, which aimed to educate people and promote positive aspects about HIV. Paying tribute, trans campaigner Chrissy Deans described Mr. Alexander's activism as bold and daring. She said that Jacob had the ability to turn something horrible, like the prejudices he faced, and turn it into something beautiful, something positive. Greg Owen, co-founder of I Want Prep Now, tweeted, "I'm shocked and saddened to hear of the passing of Jacob Alexander. He was such a sweetheart. Rest in peace." MPs in Westminster have voted in favour of a backbench amendment which addresses the lack of equal marriage in Northern Ireland. The vote is largely symbolic, but directs the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Karen Bradley, to issue guidance to Northern Ireland government departments in relation to the incompatibility of the human rights of people of Northern Ireland with the region's laws on marriage and abortion. It's hoped that this will put even more pressure on the Northern Ireland administration to bring marriage equality and access to abortion into line with the rest of the UK. The vote was passed by 207 to 117 and has been welcomed by LGBTQ campaigners in the region. Malaysia's Prime Minister has spoken out against the wave of reforms that is sweeping across Asia, giving LGBTQ people more rights. Mahathir Mohamad said that Asia didn't need to copy the West in accepting its lesbian, gay, bisexual or transgender citizens. He claims that Western countries were disregarding the traditional family unit by allowing gay marriages and permitting gay couples to adopt children. His comments come after India's Supreme Court recently overturned the ban on gay sex, Australia legalised same-sex marriage, and a Hong Kong court granted visa rights to same-sex expatriate couples. Speaking at a university in Bangkok, he said that at this moment we don't accept LGBT. If the Western world want to accept, that is their business, but don't force it upon us. The blunt remarks endorse what activists say is a growing intolerance towards the LGBTQ community in Malaysia. Last month, two women were caned after they were accused of having lesbian sex. And it's the first time women have been caned for same-sex relations in Malaysia, according to campaigners. And they say that it heightens fears amongst the country's LGBTQ community. Cate Blanchett has defended straight actors playing gay roles in films and TV. Hollywood has come under fire for giving LGBTQ roles to straight actors. Cate Blanchett played a lesbian in the film Carol, released in 2015. She disagrees with the idea that a performer only really knows the character if they have shared experiences. She made her comments at the Rome Film Festival. Previously, Sir Ian McKellen has been critical of Hollywood's attitudes to gay actors. He said that no openly gay man has ever won an Academy Award for Best Actor, but straight actors have taken home the prize for playing LGBTQ roles. Most notably, Tom Hanks won it for Philadelphia and Sean Penn won it for Milk. Trans activists and cultural commentators online have given a big thumbs up to the critical slating that Julie Burchill's new play People Like Us has received. Ms. Burchill, who was educated at Brislington School in South Bristol, is something of a contrarian. Her remarks about transgender women have earned her notoriety. One recent review in the Metro newspaper said that the play was woeful and tiresome and poorly characterised, whilst Ms. Burchill herself was deluded in thinking she had any talent. Finally, Fiona Mosley has been awarded the Polari First Book for her debut novel, Elmet. The prize is awarded annually to a writer whose first book explores the LGBT experience. Elmet is a study of family as well as meditation on landscapes in South Yorkshire and was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize in 2017. The chairman of the judging panel, Paul Burston, described the novel as strange, extraordinary and unique, with a lyrical, ethereal quality and the feel of an old folktale. Elmet is available from all good booksellers. For these news stories and more, visit our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt. For Shoutout News, this is Matthew Tosh.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's at Promises. And that's by Calvin Harris and Sam Smith.
I like that.
You do, yeah.
That's
a new one.
I like, well, Sam Smith's got a very distinctive voice anyway.
And he makes a change because he does lots of slow ones, doesn't he? It's nice to hear one that's a bit more upbeat.
It's not going
to
be slow with Calvin Harris producing.
Well, no, very true. So, one perhaps for your show.
That is definitely an H&H song.
Yeah, I bet you there's remixes of it too. So, Anyway, we got two guests in the studio with us at the moment. Normally, you'll be used to seeing certainly one of them on your TV screen, but I'm very pleased to say that they're here in the studio with us. Ben's pointing at himself. So, Ben and Seb Chowdhury, of course. Now, Ben, you're producer, aren't you?
I am.
And of course, Seb, as we all know, you're usually the main presenter.
Yeah, Ben
you?
Does the hard work.
Yeah, Seb they call the talent.
How ironic, right?
Now we promised on the show that we would explain what's going on, because of course you've been in here filming with cameras and the like, and yeah. It's for BBC Inside Out West, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, we're doing a piece with Steffi, actually. Just telling her story and really trying to reflect the kind of difficulties and the life that you've had so far. And well, Steffi, I've known you for what a couple of years now.
Yep.
You've come onto BBC Points West to sort of talk about the LGBTQ issues that we've raised, and I just wanted to know a little bit more about you.
Are you starting to interview me?
I am. Do you know, did you see how I launch into this? Exactly. But you know, that's the story we wanted to tell, and Inside Out was the platform to do it, really.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Has it been quite a learning journey for you?
To get here?
Well, no, I mean, that's in following Stefan.
It's been a few months of discussion to get to this stage,
I guess,
it?
And it started from when I come onto Points West discussing other issues of transgender people and coming on really as like an expert inverted commas onto the show, and then you were asking more personal questions, weren't you, about how I
he does that was,
I was really struck by your honesty, I'll be honest with that, because I didn't know much about the subject at all, and I was just struck by how honest you were and how much you wanted to help people understand what they would be going through. I think the first time we met, we talked about young people who were having gender issues, and I think I really wanted to understand, you know, what that mindset must feel like, and you really put it into words perfectly, and that's what we've tried to do with this film.
And it's an area that we haven't really explored in the past either, isn't it? And it's, you know, it's been a massive learning thing for me. I mean, I guess
it's about the right time as well, because the Gender Recognition Act has had a lot of publicity, and there's been a lot of negativity against the trans community. There's been a lot of support, but it's become polarized. That's the issue.
It's the unknown. And I think it has been the unknown, certainly in a large part of the media as well. So reflection of that is vital.
Yeah, and hopefully what you're about to create from what we did will educate and inform those who don't understand about gender dysphoria, and more importantly, the youth. Because you're born this way, and so you're talking of kids of 4 or 5 years old who got issues, and if they're subjugated and put down by their parents and misunderstood and not allowed to have help, and maybe not even help from schools or the NHS, then those kids are going to suffer. There's going to be more mental illness. We've already got enough mental illness now with the youth of the country, and that just seems to be climbing. Every day you read something in the news about mental health of our youth of this country. But those youth are going to be the adults. They're going to be the ones running the TV studios, the parliament. You know, they're going to be the ones running the country. So to have all this amount of a high percentage of mental disturbance,
I think,
in the youth,
it's going to be a learning curve though for everyone, the media, the NHS, everyone. And I think the learning curve has got to shorten.
One of the things that struck me was, you know, the fact that when you were having these feelings initially, you know, we're going back a long time, and has anything really evolved in the years that have passed since then?
You've got the terminology, and you've got more science behind it, because there was it was only as I was growing up and getting older that the studies came out from Holland about they found that the brains of trans women was almost identical to somebody who was born the correct way, right brain, right body. And now you've got the Australian studies that have actually found DNA, which is only a slight difference in DNA, but what they've described as very significant in the difference between men and trans women. So not only you've got the brain difference, but you've also got a DNA difference. So there's science behind it. It's not like I woke up one morning at 4 years old and I dreamt and think, oh, I'm a girl. You know, that's not what goes through your head. You don't understand that at 4 years old. You just know innately who you are.
But it's that mental strain that puts on a person. And
it does. High suicide rates, yes, that we mentioned in the, that will be mentioned in the film, I guess.
And not only on the person who's going through it, but also the people surrounding them. And I think that's that. I mean, that's what we found.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we did a long interview with Steffi and also with Lynn, Steffi's wife, and seeing how it affected Lynn was equally kind of visceral, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. It was.
Because there's always two sides. Well, it's like when I come on Points West, I'm always keen. There's a lot of trans people out there who don't like to take into account what happens to wives or husbands and kids. And I think it's important because a trans person, although they're feeling affected themselves and they're going through their own issues, there's a lot of people around them. Everyone who loves that person and cares for them will be affected in one way or another. So it's not just one person coping with it. Mm. It's a ripple effect. And as soon as you come out, that ripple effect gets bigger and bigger. It's work. It's interacting with the NHS, with the police. It's everything that affects your life.
I hope that people who see the film really understand and get inside the mindset of what's going on. And they can really get a wider perspective and view of people.
I have to say, I think it's great, because I mean one of the biggest issues is just about people finding out and knowing about it. I mean, it was like when I came out when I was gay, far too many years ago, over 20 years ago, my parents just knew nothing about it because of course it'd been banned for being taught and the like. And you can't learn and progress more if there aren't the bits out there to educate you and even tell you these things exist. Some people don't even know that it even exists, which is staggering.
And do you think we have that responsibility, to do that?
One of the main reasons Shout Out is here. You know, we are trying to help get the message out. So it's great that the BBC are also getting involved.
And I think the media has a long way to go, and it really needs to also understand how to portray the community better.
Because you can also get it wrong and put the wrong message across, and we have seen examples of that in the past.
Well, when I went into the Points West studios before I came onto the set with you, I was taken into one of the control rooms there was a couple of people there. One was a presenter now and again on Points West on the late, and another one was one of the what do you call it, a controller
who goes in the gallery stuff
in the gallery, that's the word I was thinking, and they didn't know any terminology at all. So I'm thinking, you're journalists, you know, there's a subject matter here that's quite important. At least you just have a base knowledge in it. And so hopefully doing things like this and interacting, and I think you've given us a step up, Seb, by allowing me to come on to Points West, ask me in the first place to come on as this expert, inverted commas, and now doing this film. And I hope that Lynn and I have been very honest, and it's not an easy route. There's hurt on both sides. You can't have relationships.
One of the most emotional interviews we ever done when we first met you and Lynn.
Yeah, because we've done the entire.
Do you know what? I've done so many interviews in my life, but yesterday I was saying to Ben as we were going back, it was really unbelievable how much emotion was,
but also how much honesty came from both of you. You know,
and it takes a lot to be that honest. And
I was quite tired after that.
And not only to be honest, but to be honest in the reason for helping other people. And I think that takes a lot. So,
it is lovely. Yes. So, and like we said, it's genuine. It's how really Shout Out met Steph. Yourself and Lynn came in, and it was one of the most emotional interviews we've ever done, especially hearing Lynn's side of it as well.
Exactly. That's why it's important you hear the other side.
On a lighter note...
Are you exclusively producing Inside Out West, or?
I am at the moment. Well, they'll have me. Yeah.
So I mean, for hopefully most of our listeners will have seen Inside Out West, but for those that haven't, I mean, is it specifically aiming at things like this, or?
We try to cover everything, really. It's a magazine program.
Even chasing cheeses downhill.
crawling very slowly down. Half-hour program split into three films, normally covering all sorts of issues,
from investigations to
arts, chasing and history, cheese, and
we look at homeless issues. We look at wide variety of issues. So if you haven't seen it, it's on Mondays on BBC One at 7:30. That's the plug.
And I believe
that was a great plug.
Seamless, wasn't it? It's a pay rise for you.
Thank you very much.
couple of weeks, you reckon, until this one's going out?
November 5th. Bonfire night.
Yes.
To other people.
Yeah. So you need to stay indoors, I guess, and then go out after. So it's a half-hour show, isn't it?
It's a half-hour show.
But obviously this part is not going to be
Maybe 10 minutes of it.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool.
Be well worth a watch. I really recommend that. Yeah.
And I presume you're back on our screens a little bit later on, maybe.
Yes, in a few hours.
It's never often, is it?
In a few hours' time, running back to the studios. Thank you very much for having us.
No, it's lovely, and thank you for coming in and talking to us, and also for a bit. It's the first time we've ever had a video camera from someone like the BBC.
It's quite a new thing for us at all. Thank you.
But yeah, so do you know what you're on to next? Are you?
That will be the last one programme of the series, I think. So we're working towards the next series, which starts in January.
Yes.
So we've got a few things lined up for that. Yep.
Yes.
Keep us busy over the Christmas period.
Yes, exactly. Not chasing cheese.
That's it for this week. Catch up with us online if you missed any of our shows.
Or, of course, if you want to know more about us, it's all in the usual place at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Next week, we're looking at The Invisible. But for myself, Seb, Ben and the rest of the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.